Welcome to Keeping It Real with Frankie D, an Italian-American podcast, and the very first podcast of its kind dedicated to Italian-American life. And I am your very proud host, Frankie D. And my guest today is Lou Del Bianco, the author of Out of Rushmore's Shadow, The Luigi Del Bianco Story. And Luigi Del Bianco is his grandfather and was the chief carver at Mount Rushmore. Lou, welcome. It's an honor to have you here, and welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you, Frankie. Thank you for including me in this podcast.
Your story of your grandfather, his story is incredible, and your story to bring his story to life might be more incredible. So without further ado, tell us the story.
Sure. Well, I come from a family of seven kids, six of which are girls. So I was my grandfather's only grandson, and I was his namesake. In fact, when I was born, he was in Italy, and he sent a telegram saying, "Name him Luigi, and I will pay you $1,000." And my mother said, "This is America. We'll name him Louis, and you can give us $500. So they struck a deal, but I was always raised as Luigi, and called Luigi in the family. And when I visit my grandfather every Sunday, he would always bring me to this marble bust, a self-portrait that he carved. And I could remember putting my fingers on it, him always reminding me that he would say, he would grab me by the shoulders and say, "I am Luigi, and you are Luigi." And that, to me, formed this bond, this connection.
Well, that had to be a very heartfelt thing for him to have a grandson named after him. Did you comprehend as a young child that bust, that he made that with his hands?
Yes.
You did.
And I was so in awe of that bust and so in awe of him. Because even though he was sick with silicosis, this was toward the end of his life, I didn't know him well. I didn't know him a long time. But I think that there's a quality to relationships versus quantity, where you could know somebody for years and you're not necessarily connected.
Absolutely.
With my grandfather and myself, it was a connection. I feel like he's been with me my whole life.
And that is a big thing. I too am named after my grandfather. Uh-huh. And there is a connection. Okay. There definitely is. You're bringing it, the name ahead. You're bringing the everything. You know, it's a beautiful thing. So
basically, in second grade, and he had passed at this point, I found a booklet in a drawer. And it had the president's faces on it. And I had no idea what it was. So I asked my mother what it was. And ironically, it was my mother who told me that grandpa was the chief carver on Mount Rushmore. And I just flipped. It brought it all back to me, going to the apartment, seeing the statue, him taking his old wrinkled fingers on my hand and making it feel his own face. And I said, "Can I show this to my class?" And I remember standing in front of my class, having this confidence I never had before. I was a very shy kid. I'm still shy in a lot of ways. And saying, "I want to tell you about my grandpa." And from that moment on, there was always this curiosity, this fascination with him, with his story, and with his contribution. I went through that booklet trying to find him. I couldn't find him.
What was this book?
It was basically a pamphlet.
Of the history of
the progress of the mountain carving up to that point. I think it was printed in the beginning to get funding.
Okay.
From organizations. You know, before the designer went to the federal government, he went to, throughout the state of South Dakota. This was originally going to be funded within the state of South Dakota. When he realized that the money wasn't there, that's when he moved Calvin Coolidge to come. And promise him monies would be available. And this was before the Depression. So, I'm sorry, I lost my train of thought here.
You said he was not in the book, and you...
Yeah, so I never found him, and I felt like I had been looking for him ever since. Because he wasn't there. He wasn't there in those photos. Where was he? When I became an adult, my uncle Caesar, his youngest son, bought this definitive book called The Carving of Mount Rushmore. And I could still remember him on the phone. He's a very colorful guy. He'd be like, "Louis, I'm very, very nervous. they don't mention my old man at all in this blankety blank book. Expletive, expletive, you know.
But your uncle, having been his son, he knew that my dad had a lot more to do with this than they're getting credit.
He did, but he didn't know the details because my grandfather never talked about it. He never talked about it to his kids, and his kids never asked him about it. And that was one of my uncle's greatest regrets. He said, "It kills me that I never talked to my old man." He said, "I was a young guy. You know, I didn't."
A lot of people do that. Thinking, yes.
You know. Of course, now that his father is gone and he's in a different part of his life, he wants to know more. So, with the knowledge that my of this incredible error of omission, I'm trying to give him the benefit of the doubt, I make a pilgrimage to Mount Rushmore and I ask about my grandfather's recognition on the mountain. And he's basically one name in 400 on a giant plaque.
So they have a plaque of everyone that worked on it. He is at the same level as everyone. That's it. And there's nothing else. There's no more to it.
They're called the workers and they're credited as a group. There are only five people that are singled out at Mount Rushmore. Doan Robinson, who's the state historian who has the original idea to have a carving. Peter Norvick and William Williamson, who are politicians in South Dakota who get funding. Gutzon Borglum and his son Lincoln. Those are the five. And then they're the workers.
So when you leave from this trip, what are you thinking? What is?
Well, I actually had a conversation with an author, Howard Schaff, who was also an historian at the mountain. And he wrote a book about Gutzon Borglum, and he also didn't mention my grandfather. But he told me that every author has a hook or a theme for their book, and that even though he was aware of my grandfather, my grandfather didn't figure into the theme of his book. But he also said to me, look, go and do some research. He said, go to the Library of Congress, go to the Borglum papers.
So and that's what you
he
did.
Didn't mention my grandfather, I give him props for putting me in the direction that, you know, really where it all started. And that's what my uncle and I did. I took my uncle on six trips because he didn't drive, wouldn't go on a plane, you know. Hid in the closet during thunderstorms. He was a really
boy.
He was a really interesting guy.
Okay.
My uncle insisted on doing the research, and he found the most incredible documentation. In the words of Gutzon Borglum, where Borglum complains about Luigi Del Bianco being harassed by the powers that be.
Are these letters?
These are primary.
Because at that time they didn't have email, so I'm assuming these are written.
These are all typewritten letters.
Typewritten.
Typed by his secretary, communications to the Mount Rushmore Commission, which was the body that cut the checks and oversaw the work. And they were the ones that were in charge of hiring, who would approve the hiring of the workers. And there was a real political racket in South Dakota at the time, and Borglum writes about it, where obviously people resented the fact that this person from the outside, say New York, was being paid $1.50 an hour to carve Lincoln's eyes. And why couldn't they pay three of their own people at 50 cents an hour? And that was probably one of the reasons why my grandfather there was resistance with him working.
Well, you tell me, why didn't they pay three people 50 cents an hour?
Because Borglum had hired basically 400 unemployed coal miners and silver miners to bring this mountain to life, and they all had to be trained. He did not have skilled hands to do the finishing. He only had one person.
And who was that?
That was my grandfather.
He was skilled.
Because my grandfather had the three prerequisites. He was physically strong. You had to be physically strong to be suspended 500 feet in the air with 45-pound pneumatic drills to carve out these faces. Two, you couldn't be afraid of heights. Forget it. And three, you had to have the classical training and the background to be able to work on a 60-foot tall face close up and make sure that when you're done, it looks the way it should from a mile away.
And where did he receive this training, your grandfather?
He was trained in Austria as a young boy. There's a great photo of him in the book at 13, 14 years old with an apron in Austria with all these other students. and he studied with a master carver, and then he studied in Venice for 2 years after that. Came to America in 1910.
What part of Italy was he from?
He was from Friuli Venezia Giulia, way up north, not far from Trieste.
Way up north, way at the top.
Way at the top.
Yes.
From there, he settled in Bari, Vermont, worked as a memorial stone carver, went back to Italy to fight in World War I, came back again to Bari, Vermont, and a fellow stone carver brought him down to Connecticut to introduce him to Borden, because this stone carver recognized my grandfather's ability. And Borden fell in love with my grandfather. They became like family. When my grandparents were married, they lived on Borden's estate for a year and a half so that he could have Luigi with him to work on different projects. And he worked with Borden on Wars of America Memorial in Newark, New Jersey, Stone Mountain, which Borden later abandoned to work to do Mount Rushmore. And then in 1933, Borden realized that he could only bring the faces so far. The men that he was training could rough it out to a certain degree, but he needed somebody who could carve what he called the refinement of expression. What gives the face is their humanity.
Which is amazing, yeah. Because the face is 60 foot long.
Yeah, yeah.
The nose is 20 foot long. Yeah. And yet there's this humanistic expression,
yep,
on 60 feet of stone. That's amazing.
And we have proof that it was the work of my grandfather, because Borglum lamented that whenever my grandfather quit because of this harassment, and what Borglum later called sabotage, whenever my grandfather quit, he literally, it's in writing, all finishing on the faces must stop. There was nobody else capable of doing it.
So he was the one exclusively who,
yes,
did the faces.
Yes. And Borglum woos my grandfather back in 1940 at the end, and there's a letter that says, "I must finish the faces, and all of them, I need you." So in 1940, nobody is working on the faces except my grandfather. And I just have this image in my head of this expanse of these four faces, and they didn't live.
And little
birds in. Finishing those faces, all of them. It's amazing to me. It's that's something I would love to see on the big screen, you know. Luigi as a character in a movie.
It may become a movie. Yes.
He used to love to sing Italian operas.
Did he?
While he was working. I have a letter from one of the wives of one of the workers who was communicating with my Uncle Caesar, and she said, "I remember your grandfather coming down from the mountain, his face white from dust, singing some beautiful aria from some Verdi or Puccini opera." I mean, come on.
Right. So you, after all of this pushing for it, research, traveling, how many times did you go to Mount Rushmore to plead your case?
We actually didn't go to Mount Rushmore. We sent excuse me, let me rephrase that. We communicated through the phone and through mail. We made hard copies of all of these papers where Borglum says there are supposed trained carvers on this mountain. There are no carvers. There's just one. And he refused to return because of sabotage against him. He wrote that he was the only efficient, intelligent stone carver on the work who understands the language of the sculptor. So really heavy, impressive stuff, like irrefutable stuff, empirical evidence. Now, you can't deny his importance. We kept sending them, and it was all phone call communication. And they kept saying, "There is a photo of your grandfather in the Workers' Museum. There are a couple of publications who mention him," which is true. So we feel that he has been recognized sufficiently. He is also on the workers' plaque. We don't consider him the chief carver. We consider Gutzon Borglum the chief carver, which is patently wrong. Borglum was the designer, and he names Luigi chief carver. It's in writing. So there was just intentional stonewalling going on, hoping that we would just get tired and go away. Yeah, this went on for 25 years.
But you did.
No, we didn't. And finally, I got the ear of a guy named Cam Shally, who's the Midwest regional director of all the national parks. And he said what so many regional directors and chief and all the superintendents before him, they always said, "Oh, this is impressive stuff." And I said, "You know, I've heard this before with all due respect." And the minute a regional director would go and talk with the staff at Rushmore, they would come back and you would get that same form letter. Your father was part of a group. But he didn't do that. Cam didn't do that. He did something different. He said, I have a proposition. He says, we've got to get to the bottom of this. This has been going on too long. He said, I would like to send two historians, reputable historians, our top historians, send them to your house, comb through those documents. If they make a recommendation that he should be given a plaque and recognized further, I will go along with it. I'll support it.
And did he do that?
He did.
He did.
He did, yeah.
And the historians liked what they saw,
oh,
they agreed.
They did. And we went through every document. And what they were impressed with was the fact that I included all of the research. I even included papers that might have questioned when he might have been there in a certain year. And I think that's one, he says, this is one of the reasons why we're going to recognize your grandfather, because your approach was very honest and very, you didn't put the most positive spin that you could. You showed us everything. And that's what historians like to say. Primary source documents that tell the whole story. And so based on that, on September 16, 2017, a plaque was unveiled, and my whole family was there, and CBS Sunday
morning. Did you receive a phone call to tell you that they agreed with you and they were going to go ahead with this?
There's an email that I have in the book here. It says, in fact, the...
via an email
you were... The book ends, before the epilogue, the book ends with Cam Sholley saying, we've talked to the historians, and we've decided to give your grandfather further recognition. Have a wonderful holiday. I'll be in touch with you the next year. It was a very simple, but it was everything to me.
And this was 25 years of work. 25 yeah. years, a quarter yeah. of a century of work yeah. to get this
yeah.
plaque, this recognition.
When I was with college students yesterday, because Professor Carla Simonini was gracious enough to bring me to Loyola University, and she booked me in with her students with a public performance at the college. In an elementary school, and I was telling the college students, I said, I was pursuing this longer than you've all been alive, and you're adults.
That's
you're not
yeah.
children.
That's a long time.
And I can see them going, whoa.
Absolutely.
Know, in their minds, think about it, your whole lifetime.
So you were saying it was on television then?
Yeah,
you were on the news?
CBS Sunday Morning did a wonderful story on it, which people can look up on YouTube. Just type in Luigi Del Bianco.
And then when did the cake boss get involved with
the
this?
Cake boss was a few years earlier. We were hitting so many dead ends with the National Park Service. I decided that there were many times when I took a break from the National Park Service because they were really getting under my skin. And I thought, you know what, if Mount Rushmore refuses to recognize my grandfather, then I'm going to find other ways to recognize. One of the things that I did was I raised $25,000 for a memorial in Port Chester because he lived there for 49 years and he's a legend. And then I was watching The Cake Boss with my wife because we enjoyed the show. And they made a cake of the Statue of Liberty. And I thought that was kind of cool. And then I just blurted out, oh, they should probably make a Mount Rushmore cake. And then I said, yeah, they should make a Mount Rushmore cake. So I found out the production company and pitched the idea.
And they liked it.
They were not interested right away. And I thought, oh my God, this is an Italian American family of bakers. This is an iconic.
Seems like a perfect marriage.
To make a Mount Rushmore cake? Come on. And after 2 years, I kind of gave up on it. And then out of the blue, I got an email saying that we would really like to do this.
Well, that was really cool.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
So again, you know, your listeners can go to
yes, tell us. So you wrote the book after.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
I wrote the book because when the historians were going through the documents, the historian said to me, Lou, you have been through this journey, and started with your uncle when you joined on board. You need to write a book about this. For this, as you know, from an historical point of view, you need to have a book telling your grandfather's story, his immigrant journey. Using the primary source documents, tell the story on Rushmore, and then tell the incredible odyssey to get him recognized.
And then you took it a step further, because I viewed it myself at Loyola University in Chicago. Mm-hmm. You do a presentation. You do like a little story which I found extremely interesting, which you know, you learn the story in an entertaining way.
Yes, I have a one-man show. I've been doing it since 2010. You know, I have a background in theater, and they're always having trouble casting me because I was too tall or too ethnic or not ethnic. Then I tried to get a television show for children, and I was too big and tall and scary for the kids, for little kids. And then I finally realized, well, you know, why don't I play someone who would be appropriate for my type? And it ended up being my grandfather.
And I love it because it's a great way to learn about it.
Yes.
It really is.
It's living history.
Yes.
I also do Abraham Lincoln, so I believe in living history is a great way to teach arts in education.
It is.
And, you know, and as Carlos often, the schools at Tilden today, they really appreciated the program on so many levels.
So you do it at all levels, grammar school, high school, college?
Everything.
Do you ever do it at, like, say, an Italian club or
many
organizations?
Many. Absolutely.
Well, that's great. How, okay, to do the presentation, how do people get in touch with you?
Well, they can email me, lou@findlou.com, lou@findlou.com. You could also go to my website, luigimountrushmore.com.
And as far as getting the book, how do they do that?
Barnesandnoble.com. I have a special link to my Amazon page. It's called rushmorebook.com. If you type in rushmorebook.com, it takes you right to my Amazon page. It's available in hardcover, paperback, Kindle, and I even made an audiobook of it. So it's available
Excellent.
In every format. And it's not a dry academic treatise. I mean, I'm a storyteller by trade. So when you read the book, you're going to feel like I'm sitting right next to you telling this very personal story.
Well, I thoroughly enjoyed it. I'm not going to lie. I wasn't really familiar with Mount Rushmore,
Okay. The
history of Mount Rushmore, much about Mount Rushmore. I certainly wasn't familiar with your grandfather's story. Having seen the presentation, I feel like I learned a lot. I'm much more knowledgeable. And I have to tip my hat to your persistence, because I love when something is so important to someone and they go for it and they go after it, and your grandfather is the recipient of it, as well as you and your family, but on a bigger scale. I think it's something that's huge for Italian America.
Absolutely.
And Italians.
Absolutely.
Because I sat in that audience and I'm getting goosebumps of pride to think that Mount Rushmore, the symbol of ideals of freedom and democracy and American dream, and it was carved, the chief carver was an Italian immigrant who learned this trade in Italy with the it's amazing how many Italians are so talented, and this was one more story to be proud on top of the gazillion stories of pride.
Yep.
And it made me really look at Mount Rushmore in a different sense, that now it's a must see. Because it's not just going to see Mount Rushmore, it's going to see this Italian's work. And I loved it. So
I couldn't have said it better.
Great job. I highly advise the book, and I definitely advise the presentation, because that is just great. And I would love more kids, more younger people to see it. But beyond that, hey, I'm 52 and I learned something last night. So, and I'm not young. So it's a great show. The presentation, the book. Lou, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for being here. Keep telling the story.
I will.
Because you did what you did, but now more, the masses got to learn about it.
Oh, yeah. I'm in this for the long haul, for sure.
Well, that's great. Yeah. Thank you so much.
Yeah, and you.
To everyone out there, as I always say, stay strong, stay sharp, stay Italian. Everyone have a great Italian-American day.
Just what makes that little old ant think he'll move that rubber tree plant? Anyone knows an ant can't move a rubber tree plant.
But he's got high hopes, he's got high hopes, he's got high apple pie in the sky hopes.
Oh, instead of letting go, just remember that ant. Oops, there goes another rubber tree plant.
Oops, there goes another rubber tree plant.
Oops, there goes another rubber tree plant. Once there was a silly old ram, thought he'd punch a hole in a dam. No one could make that ram scram. He kept butting that dam, 'cause he had high hopes. He had high hopes. He had high apple pie in the sky hopes. So anytime you're feeling bad, instead of feeling sad, just remember that ram. Oops, there goes a billion kilowatt dam.
Oops, there goes a billion kilowatt dam.
Oops, there goes a billion kilowatt dam. There goes another problem, kerplop.
Oops, there goes another problem, kerplop.
Oops, there goes another problem, kerplop.